Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the city of Arroyo Grande. This is our city
Bless and guide this council as the guardian of our land here in Arroyo Grande. Let it be used for meaningful and significant projects, and that its scenic beauty be preserved for future generations. Grant long life and good health to our responsible and far-sighted council members, that they continue to serve us for years to come. May God be with all of us as we attempt to extract the positive opportunities for good that come to us even now in our age of crisis. And may God bless America and its supporters, both civilian and military, wherever they may be. Amen.
Okay, thank you very much for the invocation. Wonderful. And Madeline, you say you've been here before, and I think I remember you, so you know the drill. We get to hear your version of what Kiwanis has been up to.
Certainly. So. Recently, we awarded two $500 scholarships to local Arroyo Grande students, and we've been busy with the Strawberry Festival. We had a profitable weekend selling cotton candy and shortcake. We're currently working on cleaning up the creek with high school students. That's coming up in July. We renovated a picnic table, so we cleaned up the picnic tables in the surrounding area. We have the Harvest Festival coming up in September. We're going to be busy doing that. So we've been pretty busy.
Good, very good.
And I'd like to invite whoever's here and out there that we do meet. The Kiwanis meet every Thursday a.m. at the Quarter Deck in Arroyo Grande at 7 a.m. It's a breakfast meeting. And if anyone's interested in any further information, just come on down and join us, and I'll treat them to breakfast.
Okay, well, wonderful.
Wow.
Thank you for being here. And as always, we appreciate the good work that Kiwanis does for the community. So thank you. Okay, moving on to agenda review, item 5. 5A is closed session announcements. We have none this evening. 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 6 is special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less. Please address the council as one body. Anyone who would like to come forward, community comments and suggestions. Once again, items not on the agenda. Anyone? Okay, we have a taker.
Just an FYI for everybody. I'm also a member of the Kiwanis, Arroyo Grande Valley Kiwanis. Also with the dog park, as everybody here knows. An FYI, there's a beautiful new bench outside the dog park that was put up by one of our Boy Scouts who was going for his Eagle Scout badge. And I just shout out to him.
Okay, wonderful. Very good. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else, we'll close community comments and suggestions. We'll move to item 8, which is our consent agenda. This is normally a group of items that the council approves in one action, unless there is an item on the consent agenda that a council member would like to pull for further discussion, clarification, or to take an independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward on any of the items on consent. And if you're following along on the agenda, we're going to be addressing consent items 8A through 8K. So before we check in with the council, I'll ask if there's anyone in the audience who would like to come forward on any of those consent items. Okay, seeing no one, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda. and we will bring it to the council. What is the will of the council this evening? Any items to pull?
Do we need to pull 8I for the change?
We just have to note the supplement for the record, and I was going to clarify that there's a supplemental report for 8I that has a different recommendation and a different contract.
Okay. So we could just do the are you making that, or do we need to read it into the record?
As a part of the motion, if you could just say, as amended by the supplemental on 8I. Floodplain management. And 8K is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending Table 16.36.030A in Section 16.36.030 of Title 16 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, we're going to pull 8F, and I'll let Councilmember Ray go first.
Hang on, let me flip there real quick. I asked to have this pulled because I didn't see the I didn't understand why we were splitting the hours between the full-time employee at $42 an hour and the part-time employee at $16 an hour down the middle at 50-50. It seemed like an odd comparison. In addition, I asked for some clarification as to what the $500 supply designation there included and did not include. So I talked to Steve about that earlier, and I know Jeff is prepared to give us some more information on that.
Okay.
So, just as a lead in, that breakdown is just based on the way that the service is currently being provided, and so they've felt that was the most accurate way to calculate that. But Councilmember Ray brought up a good point, is if we calculated that by just part-time, just bringing a part-time staff person to do that, would that change the results? So Jeff has gone back and not only recalculated it, but made it more comprehensive. There were some things left out of the cost. So he's gone back and come up with a more accurate estimate under that assumption. So I'll, Jeff, present that to you as well as the answers to your other questions.
Thank you, Mayor Ferrara and members of the council. I'm asking Kelly to pass out a supplemental report on this item, supplemental information. And I do want to state that this issue came about because we have a retirement of a 28-year employee. His name is Mitch Chavez, and he's been working at the Soto Sports Complex for a long time. And so he's moving on. It's an opportunity for us to look at our operation and how we operate and what makes sense in terms of our maintenance and operations of our facilities. We promoted, as is stated in your original report, through an internal promotional, one of our six current permanent part-time employees, and those permanent part-time employees do receive benefits and some miscellaneous benefits that temporary part-time would not receive. And I calculated originally the difference between providing those services that were identified through contract services and through the use of our existing staff. And I calculated based on our current practice. And the reason I use 50-50 is it's pretty much accurate. On Fridays, we use a full-time person because there aren't any part-time employees scheduled to empty all the trash cans, and it's pretty much a full day. They go around every park. They go up and down the village. They go up and down East Grand and empty all trash cans. They take them to the yard, and so that's a 50-50 split there on how we're using our current staff. Also on the restrooms, we 7 days a week we have to go clean our restrooms, and currently four of those days are used. We assign a full-time person to do that. Three of them approximately we use a part-time person just because of scheduling. So it's approximately a 50-50 split. So that's how I came up with that cost. But good point. Appreciate you bringing up the issue of the comparison. If we just brought in a part-time person to do this work, how would that cost comparison pan out? Originally, when I did the cost comparison, because of the significant difference in using the formula, the comparison that I didn't add some cost that I really should have in the comparison. So I added some of those costs back in, such as when we bring an employee on, we have to provide a uniform, we have to provide a vehicle, we have to pay for the gas in that vehicle, and the supplies were for all the trash can liners and the toilet paper. Actually, we went through, we actually had our finance staff determine that cost. Actually, that's a conservative number. It's closer to $600 a month in terms of the supplies. When we contracted this out or went out for quotations, we asked the company to provide all the supplies. So they are providing all the toilet paper. They're providing all the trash can liners. What we didn't want to do was be providing them and not have the inventory control. So we actually included that in the cost. So that would be the responsibility of the maintenance contractor, the custodian, and don't do something else for the day. There's also the recruitment and replacement costs associated with bringing on employees. And staff believes that this is the most prudent way to provide this service at this time based on our current staffing levels and based on our situation at the Public Works Yard. With that, I'll conclude my report and answer any questions that you may have.
Do you have any follow-up questions?
I do, just based on what's in front of me here. So every part-time worker gets 17 hours of training every month?
That actually is in that I included a 15 minute when we did the original calculation. We didn't calculate it in when they show up, 15 minutes of prep time and getting ready to go out and do the work, 15 minutes at the end of the day. So that's essentially for every day we would have that included in the cost. Plus we do we're mandated, we do tailgate trainings an hour every other week. So that's 2 hours. We are obligated to provide all of our employees with bloodborne pathogen training, safe driver training. We're responsible to provide them with ergonomics training, safe workplace training. There's a myriad. There's about 20 different trainings. If you calculate it, I used about 17 hours a month of prep time, documentation time. So when somebody comes back in at the end of the day, they fill out their timesheet. There are some other costs associated with just having an employee. So I calculated those in, and that's, again, a conservative number in the cost of per month just to have an employee not here on site, not including the duties that they're assigned to. So that's where that number comes from.
And then the vehicle lease, does that mean that if we do not hire this person, we do not have that leased vehicle?
We would not have to purchase a vehicle for that or provide a vehicle for that person if they weren't performing that function. This is essentially a 30-hour-a-week position. So I calculated the cost of the lease purchase. In fact, we're doing some lease purchases this year. And those costs I based on an amortization of the lifetime of the vehicle and included some maintenance costs for the vehicle. And that's where that $220 a month cost comes from.
So don't we already have that? Didn't you say we're letting go isn't the right word, but we moved somebody up, which opened up a spot. So don't we already have this vehicle and this cost that we're already absorbing?
We're actually replacing some vehicles this year. I'm providing you with information on how much it really costs to provide that service because our vehicles have a certain lifetime, and we have to replace those vehicles at a certain period. That cost is a real cost that we have to provide this service. And so, I'm giving you the actual cost to provide the service that we have to provide.
Whether we pay it this month or don't pay it next year or whatever.
Correct.
Okay, I see. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Jeff, one of the things that jumped out, I mean, you already answered one of my questions because I wanted to make sure that all of the trash cans in the city were getting emptied, not just the park. And I see in the scope of work that all of the trash cans are actually listed. But I was wondering if there is a way, if you look at the scope of work, I think the last page, It's Exhibit A in the staff report. It describes trash can routines, and essentially all it does is talk about emptying the trash containers and what they do with the collected trash, which is simply put it in the roll-off. I guess my main concern, spending a good deal of time in the village and elsewhere with the Roy Grandy and Bloom, we go by those trash cans all the time. And one of the issues that I wanted to bring to your attention anyway is the cleanliness of those trash cans, both the ones here in the village that have the black strap containers and others as well. We have the recycle bins that have the nice, you know, blue lid to them. And if you take a look at them, a lot of them are very, very soiled, stained, dirty. And, you know, comparing them to other cities where we've been, I think we need to take a little better care of them. So I'm wondering, in the scope of work here under trash can routines, if we can add another step that indicates some kind of periodic, you know, washing of the trash receptacles to include all the spider webs that are collecting in those containers. Well, Councilmember Ray, do you want to make a motion on this then?
And sure.
We can incorporate everything?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tom.
Is there a fallback position if the job's not being done to our satisfaction?
We actually had we bid this competitively, there was a second firm that was very close in cost to this, so it would be a nominal difference in cost. If this contractor doesn't perform, which is the case in all of our contracts, if they don't meet certain performance obligations, then we can discontinue the contract in 30 days. That's in our contract, and that would be our expectation. We actually have assigned one of our parks employees, Curtis Johnson, to oversee our contractors, and so he follows up and makes sure they're doing their job right, and I'm sure I will hear from other folks if they're not as well. And so we would meet with them. Typically, the standard protocol is to talk to them a couple times, and if they don't perform, put it in writing, and if they don't perform, terminate the contract. So that would be the fallback, and then the other fallback would be to hire a part-time employee to do this work. We don't think that's the right model for us right now, but that's an option that the funding would still be there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have a question. I may have a comment. So I just would, under comment, would just say this is a good opportunity for us to try this out. I mean, clearly it's much harder to try this out if you're going to lay somebody off. If a year from now, because it is, when you put it this way, it is marginally, you know, it's really close to whether it's really saving us money or not. And I will say that when you lose that permanent part-time employee, you also lose the ability to have sort of the scale that you may need for other projects, like rainy days. So there is some advantage to just strengthen numbers as well that we may want to look at a year from now. But I do think that the opportunity now to try doing this through contract is a good idea and certainly would be supportive of it.
Okay. Want to try that motion now?
Yes. Mr. Mayor, I move that we execute an agreement for contractor maintenance services with Executive Janitorial, Inc., for custodial maintenance services for park restrooms and public trash can emptying services with the additional line item that you requested.
Second.
Okay, very good. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, moving along to item 9, our public hearings. We have one this evening. 9A is consideration of Development Code Amendment 13-003 regarding the Mills Act program, as well as other related issues, approval of a historic preservation award program and historic surveys.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I have Eileen, who's going to prepare the staff report.
Good evening.
Development Code Amendment to establish the Mills Act program will apply citywide. However, most of the properties that will be qualified to participate are located within the village area. A Mills Act program enables property owners of qualified historic properties to receive a reduction in their property taxes in exchange for protecting and maintaining the historic resource to the Department of the Interior standards as described in their contract with the city. Contracts are for a minimum of 10 years and renew the 10-year period annually. Submitting a non-renewal notice will cancel the contract, and it takes 9 years to complete. A cancellation penalty of 12.5% will be assessed for early cancellation of the contract. A development code amendment is required to establish the program within the Historic Resource Designation Code. A modification to the code is also proposed to streamline the designation process and remove the ARC's participation. The contract process is outlined in the program resolution. An applicant submits an application and a fee for a qualified property. City staff and the HRC review the application and make recommendations for the work plan. The City Council has the authority to approve and execute the contract terms. City staff will perform compliance inspections every 5 years. Mills Act property taxes are determined by the County Assessor's Office using a calculation based upon property income value as opposed to the standard improvement value. Performed during the preparation of the historic context statement should be continued with the allocation of funds toward another set of surveys focused in the commercial area of the village with the goal of establishing an historic district. The formation of a district will allow properties that may not qualify on their own merits but do qualify as contributors to participate in the benefits of the Mills Act program. An awards program is proposed as an additional incentive to reward property owner efforts in protecting and preserving our community's historical resources. Award recipients will be recognized by the City Council and presented with a property sign to acknowledge their contribution. Tonight, it is recommended that the City Council introduce a Mills Act ordinance amending Section 16.16.135 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code regarding Mills Act contracts for historic properties and amending the designation process to eliminate the architectural review. To adopt a resolution establishing the Mills Act program. 3, adopt a resolution establishing a historical preservation award program. 4, appropriate $10,000 from the general fund and appropriated fund balance for historic surveys. And 5, waive the application fee for historic designation applications for a period of 1 year. Thank you.
Do you want to add anything, Teresa? Is that it?
No, we'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay, very good. Before we get into discussion, though, I do want to turn to Councilmember Ray. A portion of this was kind of her brainchild, and so, Karen, anything that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that with regard to number 3, adopting the resolution establishing a historical preservation award program, I had driven past and read about the considerable efforts that one of our community members did or went through to renovate and upgrade their historic property, and I realized that we had no real formal way as a council to recognize those efforts, yet we have other beautification type awards that we do. And since historic preservation is such a cherished community value here in Rio Grande, I thought it just made sense for us to establish a program that would do that. So I'm very excited that this is coming forward tonight.
Okay, very good. Questions on the staff report?
I have one. I just have a question about, I mean, this has been a long time coming. I can remember when we first talked about it, but is there any other tie-in if they get qualified for the Mills Act? In other words, are they hampered in any way going forward because of the designation? Are they helped in any other way besides the Mills Act for having the designation? I'm trying to figure out if there's any other possible outcomes of doing what they're doing, because people's fear always is, what am I getting myself into?
Well, the incentive, of course, is the impetus of the Mills Act program to provide some relief for those owners of historic properties. The expectations are laid out in the contract with that property owner. So what are they getting into exactly is laid out within that contract. It's spelled out in the terms and conditions specific to that property. That's actually beneficial because it's not an unknown. It's spelled out directly what's expected of them in that particular contract. It should be noted that there's a bigger bang for the buck in terms of historic resource preservations for those properties that have a lot of work to do, and where we'll get a lot of an increased preservation of that resource, if you will, rather than those properties that may just need some routine maintenance. So that's entirely your discretion when those contracts come before you, whether we want to issue, allow them to enter into the Mills Act program, and we'll take the hit on property tax revenue, but we'll get that resource maintained.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Yep.
Just two real quick. On the property tax, the city takes a hit. Does the school district and the county also take a hit? Oh, look at the wrong person. All right.
Everyone takes a hit.
Okay, that's what I thought. And then just to clarify that I do understand it right, it's a 10-year contract, and then it's a one-year auto renewal. So you could get out in the 11th year if that was your choice. Or would it be the 20th year?
It renews for a 10-year period every year. It takes 9 years to get out of.
At any point. Okay, now I understand. Thank you.
Any other questions?
And, in short, I'm supportive of all five, but I'll just comment on a couple of them. With regard to eliminating the ARC recommendation, that makes sense to me. We're the ones up here at council that's going to enter into that contract, so I know that the HRC is going to be taking a look at that, so that is definitely not necessary. With establishing the tax incentive program, that's the crux of all of this, and the carrot, if you will, to have homeowners take on the burden of a historic home and get what amounts to possibly more than a 50% reduction in their property taxes. And given our property values here, that's no small thing. And the idea, of course, is that they'll use that that savings in order to preserve their homes for the common good. So I think it's a win-win there. Obviously, I've already spoken about the Historic Preservation Award, and the other two I have no problem with, especially the last one. We had spoken about this before, about waiving the application fee to encourage homeowners to come forward and at least come down and talk to us about it. It's really an opportunity for our city to put our money where our mouth is. A quick comment about the schools being hit. It's important for homeowners to realize that, or people watching to realize that, our schools aren't directly funded from Arroyo Grande tax dollars. They're funded by state tax dollars. So what would happen is the state takes a hit. Our kids are still funded according to ADA and according to the numbers that come down from Sacramento. I just wanted to clear that up, that it please don't read that as Lucia Marr will take that kind of a hit. That's not the way that works. So with that, all five of those I enthusiastically will support tonight.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to say thanks to staff. This has been a long time in coming. Back when the Loomis property was being dealt with, I can remember the discussions way back then. I'm definitely in favor of this, and I appreciate your work.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes, I too want to thank staff. I know we've looked at this a long time. I'll just speak to number four there, which is sort of my favorite, which is that we will, in fact, complete the surveys in the village and provide more certainty, or as much certainty as we can, for where people stand with their property. And I'm certainly in favor of all of these items this evening.
Okay. Okay, well, I will make it unanimous. We finally have a comprehensive program with all of the pieces of the puzzle in place, and so I'm very happy to see that. If there's nothing else, then you can give me a nod, Tim. I see us doing four motions here, one for the ordinance, one each for the resolution, and one for the appropriation and the waiver. How does that sound?
That's fine. You could probably take the ordinance alone and then take the other four as a block, but I'll leave it up to you as to whether that works.
I'll do the ordinance.
We can do the resolutions. We don't have to do those separately?
Nope. Okay. No legal requirement. If the vote gets mixed up, then we may have to. But
all right. Well, somebody get ready with a very wordy second motion then.
I got that.
The second or the first resolution is on page 13. Second resolution is on page 23.
Uh-oh. Maybe I'm looking at page 8. Don't I need to read the ordinance?
I can read the title if
yeah.
you
Yeah. Well, the ordinance, yeah. We're going to do that first. So I'll entertain a motion to introduce the ordinance.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we introduce the ordinance of the City Council of Arroyo Grande, amending section 16.16135 of this Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding Mills Act contracts for historic properties and amending designation process to eliminate the Architectural Review Committee.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes.
Mr. Okay. Mayor, I'd like to move that we adopt a resolution establishing the Mills Act Historic Resource Protection Tax Incentive Program, and that we adopt a resolution establishing the Historic Preservation Award Program, that we appropriate $10,000 from the General Fund unappropriated fund balance for historic surveys, and that we waive the application fee for historic designation applications for a period of 1 year.
Okay, very good. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, any discussion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Moving on to item 10, continued business. We have none. 11 is new business. We do have one item, 11A, consideration of an ordinance electing to have delinquent solid waste collection disposal service charges collected from the tax rolls. And Mr. Carmel, you get to do a staff report here. This is great.
Well, Steve and I fought over this one, but I won.
Okay.
The help will provide them with that assessment resolution by, I think this year it's July 19th. So they won't be able to do it this year, but they did request that we put on our books so that they could use it as a tool for collection, because it actually does have a lot of teeth to include in your bills a statement saying that failure to pay may result in this being added to your tax roll, your tax bill, and because they plan on using it next year. In terms of what they plan on collecting, normally they look at delinquencies that are at least 90 to 120 days old and over $100 in amounts. If they were going to go about doing it this year, I think they had 23 accounts that were delinquent based on that criteria, so over $100 and over 90 days delinquent. But again, that's not a piece of it tonight. Tonight is just the enabling legislation, the ordinance that would go on our books and be utilized next year. I think I covered most of it. Be glad to answer any questions. Again, you have total discretion in this process. Putting this on your books doesn't necessarily compel you to use it. If for any reason you had issues with the nature of the delinquencies, with the process itself, it's still your franchise, and this is your ordinance. So it's a tool in your tool chest to collect delinquent solid waste service charges.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
I want to make sure I'm understanding this properly. So obviously we're not the ones who collect the solid waste fees. So once we have this on the books, this is a tool that the South County or whomever our contract is at the time would come to us and ask us to make that recommendation to the tax roll on each individual delinquency?
That's correct. Okay. At the end of the fiscal year, they'll probably furnish a list of accounts that are delinquent and ask us if we'd be kind enough to move that forward in resolution form. That won't happen at the earliest until next June.
So it would happen in one fell. It's not going to come up every other council meeting that we're getting. It'll be once a year as a kind of a Reader's Digest sort of deal?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. We would offer the public an opportunity to comment, but we've been, the few folks who are here have deserted us, so it's just us this evening. And I think I did have a comment that I wanted to make. It's more staff direction than having it embodied in this business item, but I'll get to that in a minute. Let's start with council comments and on this item. We'll start on my right with Council Member Guthrie.
I do think that this was the request and a reasonable request from the Solid Waste Management Group and our provider for waste management. I certainly support it tonight. Thanks.
As do I, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, good. Council Member Ray?
I'm in support as well.
Okay, just to... And I'm going to support this as well, but I'm just wondering if we can get back to South County Sanitary. And just, I don't know how many other people find this annoying, and I'll call it an annoyance more than anything else, but, you know, most of us pay our bills around the first of the month, and then we sort of close the books, and between the first of the month and the first of the next month, we get buried with junk mail. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I get my statement from South County Sanitary right around the 12th of the month. And sometimes it gets lost, and I find it close to the end of the month, and I have to go back in and pay it. And I'm wondering how many people who are on the delinquent rolls find themselves kind of in the same boat. And I'm just wondering if... And I've been meaning to talk to Tom about it, but I'm just wondering why they bill the middle of the month instead of the first of the month like everybody else. It's hard when you close your books, and then you get this one bill that comes mid-month, and it's easy to set it aside and forget it about it. So anyway, the next time you see somebody, ask them about why they do that. I'm not sure it's a contributor to the delinquency factor, but it sure isn't helping those people who want to pay their bills on time.
Okay. Glad to follow up.
Okay, then if there's nothing else, I will entertain a motion.
I move an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande electing to have delinquent solid waste collection and disposal services charges collected on the tax roll.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
And Mayor Fara?
Yes. Okay, moving on to item 12. These are City Council reports. Who pays for enhancements to the medians? And I did ask several questions during that discussion. First and foremost was the enhancements to the medians that were done in Paso Robles. I wanted to know whether the city of Paso Robles had to pay for that. The answer was no. That was embedded in the project costs, and Caltrans subsumed those costs in the overall contract. And then I also asked about the enhancements out on Highway 1, whether the city of Morro Bay contributed at all to those enhancements. And once again, the answer was no. And the reason why was because Caltrans at the time had discussions with those two jurisdictions about what they wanted in terms of enhancements and median treatments that would make it look nicer than the jailhouse gray concrete wall that we have now. And so we have already had a couple of meetings with Caltrans on this issue, and, you know, Tim Gubbins, who is the District 5 director, acknowledged that coordination could have been better. And I also raised the issue, I don't know if anyone's been down through Santa Barbara lately, but they don't have dimensional treatment on their median, but they do have color treatment that makes it look a lot nicer. And they also have landscaping in between the two concrete barriers. We have nothing here. So this issue is not going to go away anytime soon. It is going to come back to us. And I'm going to keep pushing for for them to come back in and do something at this juncture would be horribly expensive to replicate the treatment that we see existing in Paso and out along Highway 1 towards Morro Bay. But coloring the wall would be some kind of improvement. And then, of course, when they get around to putting that solid median through our city, it's not going to look like what we see now between Los Barros and Traffic Way. They're gonna have to do better than that. So I expect that those discussions will continue. The other thing that came up during the COG meeting was it was kind of a spirited discussion on our legislative program, and it's unfortunate that that those discussions, and I should back up here a little bit, we mainly focus on items of legislation that come out of the Senate and the Assembly that relate to transportation and housing and all of the other issues that the COG takes up. Unfortunately, it's so difficult to keep track of every bill that spins out of that legislature. So every time we get a legislative program that lists a number of bills and it talks about the position that the League takes and CSAC takes and other organization takes, something is missing. Either a current bill that has just come off the floor or is in committee someplace isn't on there. And then, to top it off, unfortunately, we saw members of the board kind of drift away from the substance of the issue, and they started looking at items along pretty much along political lines, and it was not a good thing. And so there was a lot of frustration, and somebody kind of made a shoot from the hip motion that we might as well just throw the whole legislative program out. Somebody said second, and Supervisor Meacham, who was the chair, asked for a voice vote, and lo and behold, the entire legislative program got thrown out for this year. And so anyway, I suspect that there's going to be some subsequent discussion on what our position as a council of government should be relative to taking a position on a list of bills when we are, in fact, not typically an advocacy organization. Mm-hmm. So we'll be having more discussion on that. Nobody fell asleep during that meeting, by the way. Okay, we also approved the arena numbers for this cycle. Not much to report there. They were fairly reasonable. The RTA did not meet during that meeting. South County Sanitation, we're still wrestling with our budget. We've got a lot of capital projects that need to be addressed in the near future, and the cold, hard reality is we don't have enough revenue to meet the needs. And so we're going to be looking at kind of bringing in a budget strategist or a finance. They need to get a certification as a plant operator, and if they choose to rotate their job elsewhere, we can bring in another intern. We can do that at a reduced cost and bring in some extra hands to assist with the work. And we're also looking at hiring a plant operator slash lab tech that is dual certified, because the lab tests and the technical laboratory tests that we need to take are far fewer than is required for a full-time lab tech position. But if we have someone who's dual certified, they can help out on in the plant itself when they're not doing the lab tests. So we've had a lot of response to the application process on that. And that's about all I have. We'll catch up to the mayor pro tem.
I have a question if I could.
Oh, sure.
What's going on with the whole fine issue?
With what?
With the fine issue with the plant.
We have, right now, it's in limbo. We have appealed it with the state board, and they have up to a year to decide what they want to do.
So it could sit there.
And we have not heard anything back that they've even opened it up yet.
Okay.
So we're playing the waiting game right now, and as soon as we hear anything, we'll make our case with the state board. They have several options. They can leave it the way it is, as it came to them from regional water quality. They can reduce it. They can eliminate it. We don't expect that to happen. But and then we'll decide whether we want to accept what they do or whether we go to court.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll catch up with Mayor Pro Tem, as I indicated, at the next meeting or the next council reports, and we'll go to Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, mine will be very short again tonight. South County Area Transit meets tomorrow, so I'll report next time with them. And the HSOC has not met since my last report, so those are my two items.
Okay. All right, Councilmember Ray.
I have a medium report tonight. We just came back last week from Sacramento for League of Cities, so I'm going to kind of put that under the other and start there. There's a couple things to report that I learned while we were up there. As you know, I sit on the Transportation, Communication, and Public Works Policy Committee, and one of the things for us to watch that we chose as a group to support and recommend support from the League of Cities was AB 719, and this is a bill that would allow the Public Utilities Commission to tariff the cost of upgrading city streetlights for cities that are where the poles are owned by PG&E or other utilities to upgrade to higher efficiencies. So if and when that does pass, that would be something that may affect us for good. The idea would be that they tariff the difference between the savings that we make on the upgraded lights sort of in exchange for the decrease in how much it costs us to run the lights, and over time there will be a savings. So there won't be a savings in the initial outlay, but it would catch up to us after what they're estimating it. PG&E estimates 3 years. Other cities have estimated 9, so somewhere in between. And then there's some things that we've decided to watch with regard to safe routes to schools programs. The governor's talking about putting that in with some other active living programs, so we're taking a look at that. And so that's it for that one. On Economic Vitality Corporation, we have not met since the last reports. We meet tomorrow. Zone 3 has not met. We don't meet again until July. CJPIA, their report just came out yesterday, their monthly report, normal, nothing changes there. And for the Tourism Committee, I was unexpectedly unable to make that, so I'm going to defer that over to Steve to let the community know what happened at the last tourism meeting.
So we've made some pretty extensive progress already. The new fee actually goes into effect July 1st, but the Tourism Committee's already put together a work plan, approved a draft budget, and has received a proposal from Barnett Cox to provide consultant services in developing a plan and implementing a pretty extensive advertising plan. And then we also had our first tourism Improvement District Advisory Board meeting, and so they approved most of the
Trans Pacific cable that goes out of Grover Beach. And from the discussions on that and other undergrounding, I had a discussion with a local business owner who does underground cable, and basically what he said was that cities that are cooperative with undergrounding and cooperation when the ground is open are the ones that really have an advantage in getting this connectivity. And he used Ventura as an example. He also cited that he's had some difficulty in some of the other cities in the county in trying to get through the permitting process here. And so it occurred to me that if we had it, well, he also said that whenever we had the ground open doing things like traffic signalization, that they can drop conduit in there just for future development. And it occurred to me that that would be really good planning on our part, even if the conduit was empty, to drop that in there at any time that we have the ground open. And over time, that will save our pavement from just one more time that we need to underground something. And it also allows us to really plan ahead for this connectivity that sort of speaks to our economic development in the city, to give us a little bit of an advantage. So I called up Teresa and talked to both Teresa and Steve about possibly being able to institute a policy where we could have a policy that whenever we had the ground open, that we could install that and have that be part of our underground and coordination efforts. So I don't know, Steve, if you want to add some more into that.
Okay. Any issues bringing that back? All right. We'll put it on a future agenda for further discussion.
Okay.
Okay. All right, moving on to item 14, city manager items. We have none listed. Council communication, any correspondence, comments, anything? I actually was going to include my comments with regard to the League of Cities policy committee meetings here. Probably could have done it under other as well. But I was up there actually in Sacramento the day before. My meeting was the day before Councilmember Ray's on the Public Safety Policy Committee, and wound up having a long evening meeting with Assemblymember Shajan, focusing on Senate Bill 7, which is the Steinberg bill regarding contracts
Prevailing wage?
Well, prevailing wage for charter cities. And the issue here wasn't so much the prevailing wage issue as it was the precedent that the Senate was attempting to set here by withholding state and threatening to withhold federal funds from local projects if that particular jurisdiction does not pay prevailing wage. And we were able, through the League, to get a legal analysis on that bill, and our city attorney's department actually stated that the state can, in fact, withhold those funds. They can withhold state funds from projects that are partially funded by state money. But this bill goes farther. It says even if we have a capital project that we fund from our own money using local revenue and we don't pay prevailing wage, that they can withhold state funding from any project we do. That, according to the legal analysis, is a severe flaw and is prohibited by the Constitution. And there's case law on the books that that already substantiates that. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. It is still in the local government committee in the assembly, council member or assembly member Shajan is the chair of that committee. The other thing that we discussed is AB 939, which is a bill that is being pushed by Cal Chiefs, and for those of us who are familiar with the realignment project that the governor put forth, it has pushed a lot of the state inmates down to the local county jails. And what we're finding is that I think there are 37 of the 58 county jail systems that are already full. Maxed out. They don't have any room for anyone else. And so when we have someone that is released early into the community, they are no longer. The committee did, in fact, support the Cal Chiefs. The California Police Chiefs Association is now kind of the de facto police chiefs department for the League. we decided a couple of years ago that it made no sense to have a police chief's department in the league and also have Cal Chiefs off to the side. So we sort of kind of defer to Cal Chiefs now as the league's department, if you will, that addresses significant law enforcement issues, policy issues. So I'm not sure how that's going to affect us. I haven't had a chance to talk to Steve Annibale about it. I did talk with Sheriff Parkinson, and he was very much in favor of AB 939. And San Luis Obispo County Jail is one of the 37 that is now filled to capacity. So, anyway.
Can I ask you a quick question about that?
Sure.
So if we don't have a jail locally, then I would presume there would be some sort of sharing mechanism that you could take them to some other jurisdiction that was local rather than county and use their facility for the same purpose?
Yeah, I don't know if that's been fleshed out or not. I would think not, because I think we would be restricted to, if the violation occurred in our jurisdiction, we would hold them here if we could not hold them at the county. Now, the county can, in fact, hold them in a detention capacity until they go to court. But if they go to court and the judge says, okay, well, you violated your we're going to give you 30 days, and the sheriff says, well, we can't hold them for 30 days. We can hold them for 72 hours and get them into court, but we can't hold them for 30 days. We don't have room. So then they're cut loose. But what we can do is hold them locally and give them some jail time.
But what if we don't have a jail?
I'm not sure what happens.
That's my question, yeah. That we've talked about getting rid of ours in favor of the counties, and so that's...
Yeah.
I'm confused as to how that...
And I think that's one of the issues we have to get back, and perhaps maybe you can follow up, Steve, talk to Chief Annibale about this, because I know right now our jail doesn't have much capacity at all, and it's not in the best of shape.
It's actually been converted already to...
It has been converted already?
Yeah, evidence storage, so it's not available.
Okay, well, then we would... Well, actually, that brings up a point that's in the bill, because it's not mandatory, it's optional. A police department doesn't have to do that. They can let the courts pretty much adjudicate it, and the person goes back out on the street. There's not much we can do at all. So it's a voluntary type thing. It's not mandatory. If our jail has already been converted, and I seem to recall the chief saying we already, we make an arrest, we ship them straight to county. We book them there, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we would be one of those police departments that opt out of the flash incarceration program, which means we'll book them into county, they'll hold them long enough to go to court, and that person will probably go back out on the street, depending on the nature of the violation. So, anyway, good news.
Always.
All right, that takes us to item 16, staff communication. Anything tonight, Steve?
No, sir.
All right, then we will, at this time, go to item 18, which is our adjournment to closed session. Before we do that, I'd like to check in with the audience. John, anything you want to add with regard to closed session?
No.
Okay. Then the council at this time will be adjourning to closed session. And just to inform our audience, if there is anything reportable out of closed session, that report will be given at our next regularly scheduled council meeting. All right, so we are now adjourned to closed session.